And welcome to Keyframe, is it? Yeah, that's the one. Welcome to Keyframe, part of the Geek Show podcast network. I can't do a Nigerian scammer voice today, despite what you want, so...
That's all right. Stuff. I don't mind.
Kind of went stumpy along
those. See, I'm unable to reach those high-pitched notes anymore. I think it's because I hit 40, and at that point, everything just went, no, you can no longer do high notes. Every time I go for the high notes, it comes out as, yeah!
See? That hurts. Strained me Adam's apple too much already.
So yes, introducing us today was the wonderful Lewis. Hi. Over there is the brilliant Tucky, and I am Rob. And today, yes,
the standard also, Rob.
Yes, the standard Rob.
Not the brilliant Rob.
No, I'm just not standard now.
Bog standard Rob.
No, just standard, not bog standard.
What is the bog standard anyway? Is that like a clean toilet thing, or is it just like, swamp standard?
I don't know.
It's the standard at the bottom of a bog, I guess.
Or maybe it's something to do with Family Guy and your quagmire. Giggity.
It's a quagmire of bad jokes, am I right? Well, at least I did better.
You can hear everyone.
No, you're supposed to do them proudly. You're supposed to be like the Red Skull from Captain America. You know, embrace it. Embrace the bad puns proudly. And I don't know what's with the hand gestures.
I was going to say, for audio kind of based thing, being visual doesn't help.
Well, it doesn't help that I'm not actually... it doesn't help that the hand gestures aren't aimed at either of you, but just over there into that direction.
I guess it helps keep your voice animated and stuff, which I'm literally just realising, so I don't know.
I don't talk
my hands very much, so it's going to come across as very weird.
My sleeves are rolled up. I'm ready to destroy this country.
Yes, me too. I would destroy this country if I had the opportunity. I am joking.
Mostly. Anyway.
You listeners in the CIA, FBI, MI6. Hey, that's how
Where'd
you get
go, Lewis?
Listeners.
Didn't we have like a third presenter at some point?
I seem to remember a long time ago.
Anyway, we're going to start off with some news. First up is the Ice Age trailer.
Oh yes, I can't wait for this one. It's so original. It's so well done. Loads of like consistencies. Incredibly well made trailer. Loads of unique jokes I've never seen before. Like that's the main thing. It's just the freshness of the jokes. It's just another level. It's great. It's absolutely great.
10 out of 10 sarcasm.
Yep. I really can't add anything to that. The sarcasm was just wonderful. Because, yeah, Lewis said it all. It's just the best, isn't it, Tucky?
Oh, it's super.
It's very good because, as you can see, they went back to their roots by keeping the same characters, the same name, the same sort of feel, the same
plot.
Jokes, the same plot. And, you know, it's great.
They've run out of so many ideas. It's like, yeah, let's just put them in space.
I want to know where the flying...
They actually did that, didn't they?
Do you know what it is? It's Dino Crisis 3. That's what it is. It's Dino Crisis 3. That's all it is. It's dinosaur. They've even got a bloody spaceship. It is Dino Crisis 3, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, and the first thing that absolutely bugged me about the trailer is very early on, they fly off into space and you see like a brief shot of the world in the background during the Ice Age looking exactly like our current planet.
Millions of years of evolution and tectonic movement.
Like, yeah. Yeah, all of that happened in a few seconds apparently. But hey, it's aimed at children and children are dumb. They don't learn stuff at school.
Apparently.
So whatever.
All I can say is US public schools. And we're going to leave that there. But no, Ice Age is, oh my God, just let it die. You know, just let it go the way of the dodo, seriously.
It's supposed to be extinct in any way.
Yes. But they've been around now for how long? In terms of geological time, they have been around for millions of years.
As long as the movie, then.
Jurassic, Terrassic. I don't know any other periods of time.
Cretaceous. It's not a cross between cretin and pretentious.
Hell, if the state of the world as the ship flew by was anything to go by, they're in modern times as well, so.
Yes, I know, and apparently they have a Shangri-Lama.
Yeah.
Because it's the same sound.
Because prehistoric animals have a concept of Zen and karma.
Because llamas existed then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they have a concept of butt shaking because that's what Shangri-La is all about. Animals butt shaking.
Yes.
In every animal-based trailer. It's so funny.
Well, I'm just curious as to how they came up with the whole idea of yoga, since yoga is... And mariachi bands.
It sounds funny. I don't know what it is, but it sounds funny.
You know, the Mexican band, the mariachi players.
But I know that.
Sid was saying, I don't have anything in the world except this mariachi band, and then just three animals start playing. I'm just tired of it. Can we just go on to something else? It's like if they came up with another Madagascar.
Yeah, I mean, to be a bit serious for a minute.
Madagascar tour of Britain.
Like, to be a bit serious for a bit, I know what, like, why these trailers are like this. It's got, like, the whole visual aspect. It's got the silly aspect. It's got, like, you know, the really sort of
crude humor. You were actually going through a checklist. You were actually going through a checklist while you were watching the trailer. It was like, yep, check. Got that, check. Got that, check.
And I guess it appeals to children, but like I'm sure it's not the only thing that appeals to children. I mean, remember that these are probably being seen with adults going with their children.
Yeah.
So at least make it less tedious for them by making jokes that appeal to children that are different. Like, the children will probably still enjoy those jokes if you use similar sort of concepts and mix them up a bit.
Yeah.
You don't have to do the same ones all the time.
Well,
it's like the amount of times I've seen funny animals dancing, and it's always very hip based as well because that's funny.
Yeah,
it's, you know, like, we've seen it a million times.
I can't really disagree with anything Lewis has said.
I'm not gonna disagree at all. It's just terrible. Should have let it die. It's like, yeah, we know you need money, but panhandling would be a better option.
Let it die. Let it die.
Triple A movie production company needs money.
I mean, Ria Romano, go back to Everybody Hates Ria, or Everyone Loves Ria, because everyone's starting to hate Ria.
I think it's Everybody Hates Ria. Yeah. No. I think it's definitely Everybody Hates Ria.
Go back to, like, annoying your wife and your mother who keeps coming in your house uninvited.
Yes.
That's funnier. Stop being a woolly mammoth.
Yes. Stop being a woolly mammoth, please. Please, Ray Romano. We beseech you.
I hope he listens to this. I really do.
Breaking news, Ray Romano gets wrecked.
Anyway, moving on to another trailer. This one is for April and the Extraordinary World. It's one of those strange French theatrical animations that we sometimes find on this show.
So you say French theatrical, I think Tintin straight away.
Yeah, it's not Tintin, thankfully. Yeah. But it does have a slight Tintin vibe to it.
It very much does. I mean, I'm starting to realize, like, from being on the show for a while, because since we explore animation that's not just anime, but, you know, we explore it from different countries, I'm really starting to get this sort of feeling that every country has their own thing, and I keep seeing it.
Yeah.
And for me, it's wearing me down a bit. Like, anime is all like, oh, kawaii desu yo, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, you got the Western stuff, which we've just gone on about.
But cute is justice.
Maybe, but again, like... And then, yeah, the French seem to really like this sort of, like, it's a grand adventure sort of things.
They do. They love their grand adventures. They love their grand adventures, which is why One Piece is massive in France.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. But, this one, independent animation distributor G-Kids, they announced the theatrical dates for the US for April in the Extraordinary World. And we took the opportunity to have a look at the trailer. It's inspired by Frank Shakhdardi's graphic novel, April in the Extraordinary World, and it charts a young girl's journey to fulfill her destiny.
Sorry.
I was looking pointedly at Lewis when because he's just been talking about the French-like adventure. And just like... Stealing my thunder.
No. Go on. You're making my point. It's fine.
Yep. It's set in a world where all scientists have been taken prisoner and history has come to a standstill. And it's basically steampunk.
If you vote Trump.
It's an interesting concept, steampunk. At least.
Sorry?
If you vote Donald Trump, only without the steampunk element.
Basically, yeah.
Trump done.
Yes.
We're joking. He's seriously winning.
Oh, Dodd. You guys watch the trailer. What do you think?
Again, from the trailer, I just got like, oh, it's an adventure sort of thing. I don't like how they draw the people. It's weird to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, from what you sort of described there, it's an interesting concept. And because, like, let's put it this way. I've never heard of a story like that before. So.
Yeah. And at least there's depends no bloody high schools.
Yeah.
Quintessentially French, like, I mean, the double Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, I know it's supposed to be like a more industrialized Paris. Well, Paris is beautiful when it's not industrialized.
Yeah.
It ruins it. How dare you ruin Paris for me?
The art style is a little bit, it takes a little bit of getting used to, I think. Because it doesn't really sit well with me that much either.
Well, you've got the French stereotypes. I'm looking at the picture here, like the guards with the little Hitler-esque mustaches.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, yeah. They're probably the good guys.
The bad guy's always in a bowler hat.
Because he's supposed to be English.
Yeah.
And they don't like the English.
We're English and we something.
We had the Treaty of Versailles. They should be friendly.
I'm trying to remember. The art style reminds me of a Western animation. I'm trying to remember what it is. It looks very familiar, the art style.
Republican City from Korra.
I don't know.
You could imagine it to be similar-ish.
It's got some good names on the voice cast, some good French names on the voice cast, I should say. I'm looking forward to it, but then again, you know, I like steampunk and I like things that are a bit out there and a bit different. I'm really tired of all of the anime high schools and stuff like that. So automatically, if it's set in a high school, I'm going, you're going to have to interest me a lot more than that then.
Yeah, I've noticed that like a lot of the stuff that's coming from France lately seems to appeal to you a bit. But for me, it reminds me too much of, I think, a big part of the reason why I look at it and I'm kind of, is it reminds me a lot of the kind of cartoons that I saw when I was younger. Like, not necessarily movies, but like, I think I inadvertently saw a lot of animation from France.
You probably
which
did.
Which was like sort of on CVC and all of that.
Yeah, you probably did.
There you have it. There's one right there. And it's, I think it's kind of like, I think that's why I'm kind of like, I think there's a part of my brain that's like, I've seen this before, but I'm not really acknowledging it. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of have. So maybe that's why it doesn't hit me the same way.
Well, I mean,
most of the cartoons I've seen that are not anime have been like this.
Just on the basis of the premise and the world around it, the first thing I'm thinking of when I watch this is Steam Boy.
Yeah. Only less Yorkshire-y.
Only less Yorkshire-y. And then after that is probably Hammer Boy, which nobody's seen.
I will say, though, for everything I've said, I do like the premise as you just described it. Yeah, it's quite interesting.
It's got a talking cat in.
Well, apart from that.
Yeah, it's got a talking cat.
Which will bring us on to.
Yeah, speaking of talking cats.
Worked that one.
Yes, you worked that one out with a pencil, didn't you?
Yeah.
Just like the constipated accountant.
From DreamWorks.
Such an old joke as well.
But well worked in.
That's a way you don't want to get lead poisoning.
Right, so. This one is from Toho.
DreamWorks.
Not that Toho. No, it's not DreamWorks. Toho? Is it from DreamWorks?
3D CG animated film, Rudolph.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
You throw me off.
It's not Rudolph. It's Rudolphu. Toho. Ipai. I'm not even going to bother.
Ipaianeta.
I was going to leave you to it. Did you say
Ipaiatena?
Ipaiatena.
Ipaiatena.
Ipaiatena. That's what it is. And it's from DreamWorks. It's not Japanese. It's not. Look at it. Does that look like anime to you? Does that look Japanese to you?
Talking cats.
Okay.
It's not Japanese at all.
Talking cats. Adventure through Big City. That's DreamWorks, man.
Leading off from the talking cats, then, Tucky.
Yep.
Some DreamWorks.
Love it. Great CG adventure following the tale or journey of a lost little black kitten in the big city.
Yeah, this is from Toho. And what's it called again, Lewis?
I can't be asked to do it again. You could edit it back in.
Rudolph to Ipaiatena.
Ipaiatena. Whatever that means.
That's the cat's name.
Got a lot, and it's his name.
The big cat, that's his name.
They've got the English...
the English...
A lost black cat separated from his beloved owner, Rhea.
Rhea.
Ipaiatena, hey, what's your name? Rudolph. Rudolph, what's your name? Text the lost black cat, Rudolph.
So it's a film about, like, a lost black kitten.
That's what Ipaiatena means. It means got a lot. Yeah.
I just said that. Yeah. Sorry, Ipaiatena.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a pie in a tenner, you've got a lot.
Yeah, true. Okay, a Northeast Rich then.
That was good. That was good. Best pun.
Yeah.
Breaking language barriers with puns, that's very creative.
Yes. So, Rudolph has encountered the boss of the Alley Cats, who teaches him various things like words, because he's a cat, and various things happen. So, what do you guys think of the trailer?
When's the original dub coming out?
We don't know yet.
Because like, I prefer things in their original language, and this should be in English. Just
no,
saying.
It should be in cat. If you want the original language, it should be in cat.
I'll give you that one.
Do you speak pussy?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very Oliver and Company for me.
Yeah,
it's Oliver and Company with cats.
I was getting that vibe from it as well, very Oliver and Company. But I do like the look of it.
It is. It looks like a fun adventure, homeward bound, only without dogs.
Yeah,
it's like everything with dogs but with cats.
Well, it's an adaptation of Hiroshi Saito's original 1986 children's book, so we know the audience it's aimed at. But it looks like it's got some things that'll interest the older fan as well. Especially if you like cats.
I'm just looking at the voice cast. The voice casts look exactly like the dogs and cats that the voice.
I feel like when it comes
to... Yeah, I know.
I don't know if it's just me, but like when the Japanese give cats animal like human voices, they're always really deep for some reason. It's weird. Just like not really what you'd expect of a cat.
Yeah, I suppose we like high-pitched meow.
Instead of like, yo. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what Japanese cats sound like in movies and stuff.
We used to have a cat years ago called Trixie, and she didn't go meow like that. It was more like meow.
They used to have a cat that was really fat. We call the chairman meow.
Did he have a little red ball?
Yes, he did.
Meow. with his little red ball.
That you remind us of that Markiplier video. Meow.
Meow, 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 meow. Tucky is not having a fit. Let me just make that clear.
Watch the video, you'll get the context. I'm not
doing
just
a Markiplier impression, I presume. Would you explain why it sounds like he's having a fit?
Yeah, because anyone listening to this is just going to hear Tucky making weird noises. They can't see what we're seeing.
Get the camera up. Everyone will watch it.
Anyway, we're going to leave that to one side because we've pretty much destroyed that story.
Yep,
and it was such a feel-good movie as well.
We'll just put that down, meow.
Yeah. Moving on to Kadokawa, who have a crazy idea.
Not crazy.
Okay.
It's very frugal and a viable business plan.
Yeah, it's very frugal and a viable business plan. It's also Tucky's honeymoon is they're planning an 88-stop anime pilgrimage tour for foreigners.
Sugoi!
Sugena! Yes! Now, there are two questions I have. Number one, what locations are they going to pick as the centerpieces for this tour?
Akihabara!
Number two, no, the Holy Land is what you want to reach.
That's why you want a climax.
That's why you have the pilgrimage. You start off somewhere and you basically walk to the Holy Land, which is Akihabara.
Well, the Ghibli Museum's going to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, the Ghibli Museum's
in there. Ikebukuro's going to be in there. I mean, we've got no details here. I'm just taking guesses.
And Nakano Bay. Nowhere else matters.
Well, we don't know. They might just have, like...
and the place where Higurashi is based on.
The Chaco region where Binchatan's from might be on there, but nobody's heard of Binchatan in the West, even though it's absolutely adorable, and you all suck if you don't know it.
Well, I'm an otaku. I only know Akiba.
Binchatan's character, really, really cute character, really nice slice of life series. Anyway... So, they're planning this, and Tucky wants to, what was it, honeymoon there?
Yeah. with or without the missus, I don't care. I'll take myself.
You know, weeb jokes aside, it does sound like it could be pretty fun to just go with a bunch of people with, like, interests and...
Well, are they going to make you wear the sandals and the outfit and the hat and walk with the stick?
Oh, you've got to go full.
If you're going to do it, if you're going to do the pilgrimage, you've got to go full pilgrim.
Or walk the whole thing.
Yeah, you've got to write prayers on a bit of card and put it in a box at a temple.
Maybe it'll keep the more obnoxious weebs quiet as well. It can't be all bad.
Well, yeah, exactly, because you're not supposed to talk on this, are you? You're just supposed to chant.
Is that how pilgrimages
yeah.
are?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You're supposed to chant and, and pray to the god of anime.
Just either that or, like, just drive all the way there in, like, several Toyota AE86s. Just drift all the way.
Well, you know.
It's got to go ahead. It's got to.
I suppose you could Itasha the hats a little bit instead of having just the normal reed hats. Have something
initial
like lucky
references.
Yeah, have something like a lucky star on there or something like that. No.
Have you seen the fat guy video of that?
No.
Oh, you're in for a treat. Just a bunch of fat guys that did a live action opening of Lucky Star.
Wait, I think I've seen that.
You should.
I think I found myself, like, I was looking at Lucky Star, like, clips, and then I found myself in the weird part of the internet that revolved around that. And I was like, oh, that's really funny. It's because they're sort of, like, half into it. Like, they're sort of doing it properly, but they're sort of, like, just like, whatever. It's really funny.
Okay, moving on to the final news story then, Tucky.
Hatsune Miku, Hatsune Miku, Hatsune
Miku. So you'll not hear it together, Vocaloid and Oxford University.
Yes, Vocaloid and Oxford University. Tell us about Vocaloid and Oxford University.
So,
are they awarding Hatsune Miku an honorary doctorate or something like that?
Oh, what are you doing here, God, Miku? No. You don't even speak English.
So while teaching for Vocaloid software in schools is something that's been around for a while, it's not too often that you see Hatsune Miku and the Vocaloid phenomena studied at universities. In particular, it's being studied at the oldest and most well-known English university in the world, the University of Oxford.
Get wrecked, Cambridge.
Yep. I really had nothing to add to that. That caught me off guard.
So they've actually released a proper educational college textbook. Unless you're actually studying it, it's more of a novelty item, but for $150, that's about £115 with today's rates, or $120, so about 98 quid for a digital version. How much is the most expensive book in the world, would you ask?
The most expensive book in the world, you don't want to know.
Yeah, Red Sea Scrolls.
No, Dead Sea. See, there's a
this
difference.
This is close.
There's a difference between expensive and priceless.
No. Luckily, most of it's available for free reading on Google Books.
Woohoo!
Oh, minus chapter 9 and part of chapter 8.
Is that that's
an absolute demon.
No, minus chapter 9 and parts of chapter 8. Are those the saucy bits?
I was going to say, let me introduce you to rule 34. And here is the many forms of Hatsune with no clothes on.
By the way, we all know that. We all know who murdered Tupac. It was Miku. Tupac was stepping on her turf.
Conspiracy theorists are up in arms right now.
She went, Poppy, pause this.
Knew about that hologram technology from the past.
Yes.
And that's not too soon, so I'm all right.
I honestly don't know what to say about that.
No. Well, education these days, £9,000 for that.
That's yeah. Miku. Has anyone seen that Toyota advert?
Yeah. Which one?
I can't remember. There was some Toyota. It might have been a Prius or something. No, it wasn't a Prius. I don't know what it was. But there was some like Toyota car, and it was really sort of like heavily Hatsune Miku themed, all the adverts. And I think they may have released like one Itasha version with Miku on it.
The and Toyota Corolla.
That was the one. And yeah, one of the adverts had like a hot dog guy working a hot dog stand, and he met Miku, and she was really tall for some reason. And
yeah, that's when she went on
the tour of
the US. He was
very happy,
US.
And then he started singing and dancing in his hot dog advert about Hatsune Miku, and it was really, really cringy, but really funny. He was just like, Hatsune Miku, Hatsune Miku, ooh, ooh.
The American advertisers just didn't know what to do.
They really didn't.
So here's a concept and a fake character that doesn't exist, make her exist. Oh.
But she was eerily tall in that advert.
She is?
Yeah.
What's power in her?
The power of music.
Oh, it just cuts to the concert. That's terrible.
Miku is alive with the power of music. Yes. Yes, she was. Shall we take a break there, then?
Yes.
Yes, please.
I think we need to take a break there because I think Lewis needs to come down from his Hatsune Miku cloud. And
I was never on it. I like the Project Eva games, and I guess I like the concept and all of that, but yeah, I had to reference that advert somewhere. Hopefully someone's seen it.
I'm watching the hot dog guy video.
Exactly.
You need bacon-wrapped hot dog.
Bacon-wrapped hot dog, eh?
He's actually in a hot dog costume
as well.
You
need to hear it with sound. Listen to that.
I will play it on this during the break.
All right.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment after this message.
TV. There's a lot of TV. Even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to the Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On The Box.
Hello there, and welcome to Keyframe on the Geek Show Podcast Network!
Yes. That too.
Whoop.
With a zoop, whoop zoop. And the zoop zoop. And the what? I don't know.
Can I get a what?
I have no idea. Anyway, we are going to be talking about anime now, and we've got things to do and things to talk about. I think I'm going to go first this time, aren't I?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, from Anime Limited, I have the first portion of Gundam.
Sounds tasty.
Yeah, and I forgot how much I hated Amuro as a character. Seriously, I forgot how much I hated the lead character of Gundam.
I know nothing about Gundam. I'm very, very, very sorry. I will not be able to add much to this.
Gundam is the mech series that everybody knows about. It's the one that's been around for forever. Everybody knows Gundam. Everybody's heard of it.
Yeah.
Everyone's tried copying it. The only real rival to Gundam over the years has been Macross. But we're not talking about Macross. Now, this is the original Mobile Suit Gundam TV series. I think it's from 1979, was it?
It's a long time ago.
It's
1979, April 7th.
1979. And it's one of those shows where it really laid the groundwork for everything that came after, when you get right down to it. There were very few shows like this, and there were very few shows that actually got as political as this did at the time. I mean, it starts off with the Earth Federation. They have colonies all over space, and then one of the colonies decides it's going to go for independence, and they become Zeon.
Yep.
And they make moves against the Earth Federation because, and the war starts. And then in each of the territories, in the Earth Federation territory and the colony territories, about half the population ends up getting killed during the war. It's a horrible thing. Humanity itself is disgusted at how it's treating its own race. The people themselves are disgusted with what's going on. And into this mix, you have a bunch of Zeon soldiers landing on a colony. And in that colony, the evacuation order has been given. And the Zeon soldiers are looking around. They're looking for people to kill, ostensibly, or kidnap, or whatever. And
so
they see a girl. See a girl running. It's war. There is no such thing as good or evil in war.
Okay.
And they see a girl running. And she's running into a house to get her friend Amuro. Now, Amuro is the main character, ostensibly, from Gundam. And he's a tool. Now, let me repeat that. Amuro is a tool. I don't like him as a character.
Oh, that kind of tool.
Yeah. You know, I think that they've improved the character a lot over the course of the series, but ostensibly, he's kind of the archetype for what ended up being Shinji Ikari, in a sense.
What's his name again, sorry?
Amuro Ray. And he is, how can I describe him?
Well, if he's anything like Shinji Ikari.
Well, he's not as depressed as Shinji is, but it's kind of the opposite of Shinji, in a sense. He's too distracted by his own self-importance, I would say.
Oh.
He gets in the robot.
Yeah. The similarities between him and Shinji is that they both believe that they're more important than everybody else.
Mm.
And I didn't like that aspect of his character. It does dumb down quite a lot over the course of the series. And I think the reason why I tolerate Amuro a lot more than Shinji is because Amuro had a lot more time to develop as a character.
Right. I was going to say, yeah, he sounds like a flawed protagonist, so maybe they went somewhere with that.
Well, and the thing that I didn't like about a lot of things that came after was that they kept using this whole flawed protagonist idea, and it kind of got old after a bit.
You can only take so much ego.
Yeah. Which is one of the reasons why when Hideki Anno did Gunbuster, it was such a breath of fresh air, because, yes, the protagonist was flawed, but she wasn't flawed in the way that, well, number one, it was a she as the protagonist, and number two, her faults and her flaws weren't a sense of her own self-importance. Her faults were that she, you know, she wasn't very good. She simply wasn't very good, and she knew it, so she had to work harder than everybody else just to try and stay at the same level as everyone else. But she knew that she wasn't as good as everyone else, and that was her main flaw. But that's not a bad flaw to have, and it's a nice one to have instead of the whole egotistical. No,
it's a lot bigger than it thinks it is.
And slightly lopsided.
Well, he is a bit of a dehumanizing person when interacting with others, I guess.
Yeah. But anyway, the Federation, Zeon, they have a war. There's a new mech that's been created for the Federation, and it's being transported, and Amuro gets into it. Yes. It literally is.
He gets right into it.
That is literally the story of Gundam, isn't it?
Yeah.
He gets in the robot.
And he uses the robot to fight off the enemy. All of a sudden, he's been drafted into the war because he's now the pilot of the robot. There was loads of things that came from the original Gundam series. I mean, the word new type, for example.
Yeah.
New type is something that was coined in Gundam. Mm-hmm. And it refers to a new type of human, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Basically, the kind of the second stage of human evolution, where they started developing new abilities and...
X-Men-ish.
Yeah, X-Men-ish. See, it would have been hilarious if they were called X-Men-ish instead of New Type.
But hello, I am X-Men-ish.
It's an odd thing to release Gundam on Blu-ray because it doesn't really work as a series, as a Blu-ray series. Because yeah,
it's got it's so much sharper. And
well, yeah, it's such an old animated series. You can't really do much other than doing a complete overhaul, but... I do know why Anime Limited have released this, because this only goes up to episode 21. They've released it purely because they're also doing Gundam Origin, which is kind of an updated, revamped version of the original Gundam story. And that's the only reason why. And I'm actually glad that they are doing that. They're releasing both of them at the same time. So you can see how much the story has changed and developed and how much it's influenced the anime industry and the manga industry and general... otaku industries over the last, what, 40, 50 years?
Yeah, it's became huge. I mean, the one-to-one scale Gundam
it's a landmark.
It's a tourism landmark. It's up there with, like, Eiffel Tower and whatnot.
Exactly.
Like, Hatsune Miku's a big thing and appeared on Super GT cars as well, and so did Gundam. No, that was Evangelion. My bad. Forget I said that.
In terms of cultural impact, Hatsune Miku and Evangelion are tiny compared to Gundam.
Yeah. Well, again, I made a mistake. I mixed up Evangelion and Gundam.
Don't worry. Gundam have appeared on cars as well.
On Super GT cars.
Not Super GT cars, just on normal cars.
They've got their own bullet train as well.
Yeah, they've got their own bullet train for Gundam.
Mm.
See, that's what Gundam says. Gundam looks at Evangelion and Hatsune Miku and goes, yeah, you can have your GT cars. We've got a bullet train.
Yeah, but GT cars are cooler. Bullet trains are a bit on rails for my taste.
Oh, mag trains, that new one that goes up like 300 kilometers an hour or something like that. It's like hyperdrive speed.
Yep. Oh, you mean Hyperloop?
You're looking at all the specs on the front of the mirror just turn into lines as you go fast.
Yes.
I'm sure Super GT cars hit close to that speed, but I don't know.
So, yeah. Gundam, it's worth watching if you've never seen it. It's worth knowing the origins of the franchise because the franchise is massive. It's probably the franchise in anime that has the most money behind it and the most weight behind it. And it's the franchise that pretty much made Bandai as a company. They've made a fortune from this, more so than any other intellectual property that they own. If Sunrise did nothing but Gundam, they would be fine.
Yeah.
They'd be in the red pretty much in the black pretty much year in, year out if they did nothing but Gundam. They do other stuff as well, but Sunrise mainly focus on Gundam.
Just looking at it, it's also in the field of scientific research. Dava Newman displayed a bio suit with a headline, Mobile Suit Gundam's normal suit is now real.
Yeah.
That was February 14th, 2008, where NASA proposed research into nuclear thermal rockets and actually used Gundam as a reference.
Yeah. That's well, awesome. I mean, there's all sorts of museums and exhibitions and, you know, in military and aerospace, there's all sorts of things. In government and, you know, in the arts, there's all sorts of things. It's been so influential, it's kind of ridiculous to think that it... I mean, when you think about it, if you look at Western comics and Western cartoons, there is nothing in the West that really kind of matches the impact that Gundam has had.
Oh, there isn't.
Except for maybe Star Trek. In terms of cultural impact and in terms of technological impact, yeah. Star Trek's the only thing that comes close.
Yeah, because you get all like Star Trek thought of this first.
Exactly.
I'm just looking here. It's back in June 30th last year. They actually did a report on Japan's self-defense forces.
Yeah.
And they actually like kind of pretended they had Gundams and all of China was kicking off because if Japan's got Gundams, they're going to win.
Yeah. I know.
And it actually turned out to be a commercial for noodles.
Anyway, back to this Blu-ray set. This, as I said, it has... the first 21 episodes of Mobile Suit Gundam. There's no real extras. There's a clean opening, closing, that sort of thing. And the languages are English and Japanese. The dub is good for both of them. But what can you expect after all of this time? It's going to be a decent dub at the least. You know, they've had plenty of time to work out the kinks. They're not going to really make any mistakes with it. And so, yeah, I think if you're into your Gundam and you don't already own Gundam, it's worth getting this version of it. But I would say if you're new to Gundam, then maybe look at Origin first before you look at this. Because Origin is the story all over again, only with better sound, better animation, updated visuals, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So maybe look at Origins if you're new to Gundam. If you're an old Gundam fan, then definitely get this as well.
I'm just thinking there, you're looking in 3 years' time, it's going to be the 40th anniversary.
I know. So having it on Blu-ray for the 40th anniversary means marathon!
Back then it was known as Snickers.
Yes, I know.
Now it's known as Snickers, but back then it was marathon.
Damn it. I know.
Time jokes.
Old school like marathon prior to Snickers.
Yes. So, who's next then?
I love the stare I get. All right, 2 seconds, let's get it up. No. Should really think. So this week I had nothing from the Cupboard of Wonder. So I opted to go for something that I've been watching for a few weeks now. It's Tenaru no Seki-kun, which my neighbour Seki.
The master of killing time.
Yeah, the tagline, the master of killing time. And
when I saw that tagline, I just had this mental image of Seki with like a pipe or something like that, just smacking the crap out of a grandfather clock.
I was more thinking of like a sort of generic anime anti-hero which has some kind of time control powers. Yeah,
the doctor's mortal enemy, some kid who sits at the back of his classroom.
Well, he would be. Yeah, can you imagine if the doctor met Seki-kun and the doctor's sitting there and Seki-kun's doing all his usual stuff, you know, and the doctor's just going, I don't want to go anywhere. I just want to wait and see this. But Doctor, the Daleks are destroying everybody.
The wonders
I want to
of
see
the
what
universe
happens.
An endless time. Imagine this kid's doing something good.
Of course, Seki's going to be like, as you can see, I'm the master of killing time. It's why you're still here, correct?
Yes. He wastes 7 regenerations.
I have killed
just
the Doctor's time.
Yes.
Anyway, back on there. blah, blah, blah. So I've decided to review this. It's something that's not released yet. So if you're licensed and listening, I'd highly recommend you get it sorted. The series has about 20 episodes, not including specials and over years. And each episode is approximately 7 minutes long, 5 if you don't include the intro and outro. So no excuses not to watch. The show is a series of what I'd call sort of skits. In a way, following the back of the class actions of Seki and Rumi. That sounds wrong
when you say it like that.
My mind. The neighbours at the black at the back of an ordinary Japanese classroom.
Get to the black of the class.
So to start, I've watched this show and consider it to be one of the best comedy animes of modern times, and I'm not trying to oversell it. That's kind of underselling it.
Did you say animes?
Animes, kind of skits, animes, shorts.
Oh my god!
The plural of anime is anime. No, the plural of anime is anime. It's like the plural of manga is manga.
Yeah, man. You don't know anime, man.
I don't know grammar much. back in the classroom, an ordinary Japanese class. I watched the show and consider one of the best anime of modern times. And I can't praise this show enough, as it holds down fantastic dialogue, prop comedy, and humour that everyone from the hardened elitist to the simplest weeb can appreciate and enjoy. Plot wise, with a bit different skits, it's just basically day to day, or you could say period to period, goings on at the back of different classes, and Seki finds new and inventive ways of killing time rather than doing his schoolwork like he should. And somewhere along the way, his neighbor Rumi, she manages, and other class members manage to get dragged into his shenanigans. Character-wise, there's the whole playoff between Seki and Rumi, and it's fantastic the way they do it. Even though he doesn't talk, he has vast range of faces and body language, and the playoff against the more stern and formal Rumi character.
Do you know the weird thing when I watch this? Rumi really reminds me of Lisa Simpson.
Kind of.
You know, she really... I don't know why.
I want to study. Don't. Stop doing that. Stop it. I'm sick of your eccentricities.
Yeah. I think it's just... I think part of it was a little bit the look of her, but also the attitude, as you say.
Oh, yeah. She's fantastic as an angry character. And the thing is, like I say, she gets sucked into it as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you try acting all high and mighty, you're no better than him.
Well, I think that's why she reminded me of Lisa Simpson. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I think that's why she reminded me of Lisa Simpson.
So I have so many highlights. Absolutely so many, because like I say, there's like 20 different episodes of this, more in fact, and every single one is comedy gold. So starting off the first episode, where Seki builds an intricate track of dominoes on his class desk out of erasers. And it wasn't just like a simple setup. I'm talking like multi-layer tricky obstacles and a finale that was hooked up
like
to pyrotechnics.
An S-curve and
there was a bridge.
There was a bridge.
And a seesaw. Aye, there was a seesaw as well. And kind of like at the top, like a, I don't know, like a zip wire.
Yeah.
All leading to a giant fire.
All out with these little erasers. It's just amazing.
I've seen the screenshot for it. It's pretty intricate.
So it's... And the next episode, it pops to mind is the one where he overly polishes his desk to a mirror shine.
Yes.
I mean, it's like you think like a desk, it's not going to be exactly smooth, but he's got like all the tools, like the resin just to like get it out, and he polishes it and everything. It's fantastic. I mean, just watching somebody polish a desk for 5 minutes and annoy the neighbor with it. We've got
the family of robots.
Oh no, I'm getting to that.
Oh right.
There's one where he plays Go.
Yes.
But instead of playing it as you'd normally play it, even though it's like a two-player game, he starts making characters, and it's like a bear against a rabbit, and he ends up fighting somehow. And Rumi's just sitting there watching him like doing it, and he's like, "That's how you play Go, is it?" And it like kind of cuts to an official match. It's like, puts all the characters down, and it's like, bear chop. Osagi punch. And she ends
Osagi
up...
Osagi punch?
Yeah, because it's like Kumar versus Osagi.
Oh, right. I so thought you said Osagi punch.
Oh, that's a different kind of anime. And she ends up getting caught into it, like doodling the characters, and stuff happens. Just watch. And to stay along the like lines of like the tabletop games, he plays shogi, but instead of like playing shogi normally, he makes up intricate stories, and it's kind of like a theatrical play, where it's like a gold warrior, which is kind of the equivalent of, say, a bishop or a knight on a chessboard there turns against his king and defeats him. But there's like some kind of like plot twist where the princess is saved by them all or something. I can't go into detail or remember much.
Sounds like the chess game from No Game, No Life.
But it's fun things like that. And as Rob said, the robot family,
which I think is one of the best ones.
It's like three or four episodes with the robot family in, and it's every situation. It's like, you know, it's school where you get school drills. It's in Japan, they've got like earthquake drills.
Yeah.
And it's like, you've got to be serious. And Seki he loafs around and he doesn't take anything serious, but the toys he's playing with are taking things deadly serious. It's like, the earthquake one where they've got to practice hiding under the tables. He's actually just like sitting back on his chair, just laughing with his friends that are close. And Rumi's just watching, like, oh, look at him loafing about and that. And she looks down and the robot family's actually hiding under a table, like a miniature table that he's put them under. And she's like, oh, look at them, they're following the rules. And she ends up falling in love with, like, this little family because they're so upstanding.
I just love the one where, you're going to say?
Does Rumi ever get in trouble because of...
All the time.
I love the one where you have the robot family and... the teacher starts walking over and he has to hide the robot family.
Yeah,
you got like the dad hanging off the side of the desk.
I decided I hate Seki now because he is that guy. He's that guy who's always doing something in class and you just look over like, what the hell are you doing? And then you get in trouble for it somehow and he gets aware of it.
Yeah,
that's exactly
screw that
what
guy.
For the fun.
You should be ashamed.
I highly recommend watching this. I'd usually have like a positive and negative section, but it's all positive for me. The animation's spot on, and if you actually watch the intro, they actually have Seki storyboarding, animating, colouring, and even voice directing from his desk.
Yep.
I think it's a fantastic touch. And even the lyrics to the opening songs, just Rumi complaining about how Seki annoys him.
Yep.
And annoys her. And the same goes with like the catchy ending song where he's just playing a bunch of things on his desk, but it actually sounds like a proper drum. And I dare you not to get that stuck in your head, because it's one of them really catchy tunes that just stays with you.
Yep. Yes, it is.
Character-wise, I have already mentioned like there's two main ones, but they do introduce more of the classmates later on and add support to it. And with it being like a typical school, like rumors start flying around when Rumi starts paying too much attention to Seki, and it's like, oh, are they having an illicit affair? It's like, well, clearly not, but you know, schools. it just adds to more misgivings and more humor. If I haven't convinced you yet to go and watch this show, then, you know, you're a sad human being. you should. The world needs laughter, and this anime has it in spades. And be sure to watch the OVAs and the special episodes too, because everything in it's solid gold. There's not a single bad thing about it that I would actually bring up. So I've given this a Tucky rating of 10 stars
out of 11.
Well, not saying yet.
He's not going to tell anyone. Okay, and finally, Lewis.
Well, this week I've been watching Orinoe Motoga Konani Kawaii Waki Aganai Part 2. And
is this Part 2 or Season 2?
Season 2, yes.
Right.
And as you may remember from a few weeks back, it is an anime about a guy and his younger sister and their relationship.
The English title, the English name for it is...
There's No Way My Sister Could Be This Cute, or something like that.
My Little Sister Can't Be This Cute.
Yeah, something to that effect.
Yes.
And, yeah, this season, the first season, I would say, introduces the characters and shows their current relationship and shows how they went from ignoring to each other to becoming friends. And now it expands on that. Now, where does it go? I'm not sure how deep I want to get into this, because obviously that would be explaining
how it
ends.
Keep it light.
Well, what do you mean?
I think just kind of brief description.
Yeah, like, again, like, I don't want to like just be like, oh, this is exactly what happens. But I suppose, yeah, it goes into what their relationship is like.
Yes.
And I suppose one way of sort of putting that into perspective without necessarily saying anything is that someone put it on the internet. This became the main character's called Kyosuke Kosaka, and his little sister is Kirino Kosaka, by the way. Someone put this as Kyosuke's harem. like, that's kind of what this season is about. Because it's kind of a harem anime, but the first season wasn't really like that. There was a few hints dropped here and there, but it never really went anywhere with it. And it was mostly about how he's helping out Kirino more and being more friendly towards her, and how Kirino's being less of an ice queen towards him as the first season progressed. Now it's like, it's kind of established that they're okay with each other to some extent, and they're not really at each other's throats quite so much. And it focuses more on Kyosuke and the other girls.
Yeah.
And how do I put it? It's a lot of the time sort of spent with girls sort of, I'd say, throwing themselves at him, but it seems that no one in the show can express their feelings properly. So maybe throwing themselves at him is not the way of putting it. More like circling around him until something eventually happens.
Okay, first I had mental images of girls just loading themselves into catapults and then going fire. But now I have a mental image of girls as vultures.
So that's a good way of putting it.
I love Kyosuke because he's so nice and does nice things to people. And
I'm going to pick the flesh off his bone.
Yeah. No, to be fair, they're not that mean. They don't like abuse his niceness or kindness. They're just sort of attracted to it, which is fair enough. I mean, he's got a lot in common with like a lot of harem protagonists, because he's not supposed to be great looking or anything like that, and he's not supposed to be special, but he's nice and kind, and that's all that matters, which is all right.
Yeah.
But he seems like a decent enough guy. He goes far enough for other people who he doesn't, you know, without expecting anything back from them, and, you know, I can appreciate that. But yeah, it's sort of about that and his relationship with the other characters, who some of them are Kirino's friends, some of them, like, Kirino knows all of these girls to some capacity, and the effect that it has on his relationship with him and Kirino. Now, he and Kirino are siblings, rather. So it shouldn't be a problem, but of course it's a problem. It's Kirino. Yes. So it causes some friction. He gets a girlfriend briefly. They break up, you know, stuff like that. It's basically all about that. That's mainly what it's about. I don't really know. I can't really get too much into the specifics. I suppose, like, the good things are, again, like, the way the characters interact with each other seems reasonable enough. Mm. There's a few elements of the show that sort of show what's going on without being too on the nose about it. Like, it's one thing I sort of judge a lot of sort of shows by these days are how they get certain points across. And I definitely agree that for the most part, show don't tell is a way to go.
Yeah.
There are some instances where, you know, telling someone something is necessary or may achieve an effect that is relevant for what they want to do. But in this instance, it's, you know, there's enough of, like, you know, you just see what's unfolding. Like, Kirino's attitude is like never explained, but we see enough events in the form of a lot of flashbacks, if you don't like that kind of explain how things came to be. But yeah, it mostly focuses on that. There's still a lot of humor to it, but there's a lot of bits that get more serious. Like, there's one particular scene where I don't really know how to put it without, you know, explaining too much, but there was one scene where one particular character was very upset about something that happened, and the voice acting was very good, because it's kind of like, well, that's really sort of raw emotion there.
Yeah.
So it's got this mix of seriousness and stuff like that. But yeah, that's mostly what it's about. And it's quite different from the first half in that sense. So it's very difficult to, like, sort of make my point without really getting into what actually happens. It's very difficult.
Is this then just a normal comedy anime, or is it a drama, or is it a comedy drama,
or just harems?
It's the weird thing. It sort of mixes both. The first series had some drama elements to it, but there wasn't very much of it. And this one turns up the drama a little bit more. And I think it does it reasonably well. The characters, the girls are in question, there's a lot of strange characters in the show. Like, again, the way they come across to the main character, and the way they sort of, like, interact with everyone, it's very sort of indirect. So depending on your tastes, you may not necessarily like the girls that are interested in him. Like, for me, it was like, okay, some of them seem cool and all of that, but, you know, there's a lot of parts where they're trying to get their feelings out, but no one ever talks about it directly. They talk in a lot of hypotheticals, like, well, what if I did this? How would you feel? Well, I'd probably do this. And then they slowly come to understand each other. And I suppose what this really comes down to is there's a lot of that between all of the characters, normally involving Kyosuke because the world revolves around him.
Yeah.
And eventually sort of narrows down, down and down to a point where he gets to an ending.
Yeah.
And he, and I guess Kirino, sort out their differences, so to speak, based off of all of that and all the drama that comes around it. And I guess it works okay. I mean, given the characters' ages and how they are, it makes sense that they would do it this sort of way rather than give a straight up, this is how I feel and this is how things are going to go.
Yeah.
It's kind of put behind the whole otaku aspect to it in terms of the friction that created in Kirino's life, because most of the characters know now and largely accepted that she's a filthy weeb who likes little sister Erige. So yeah. That bit's, it's mostly focused on that. And yeah, I suppose it's okay. The ending is very interesting. I'm not going to say exactly what happened.
I heard there was a lot of studio interference in this series.
Yes, because the ending goes a particular way. And, you know, that's the ending. And then it kind of flip-flops at the last minute.
Yeah.
That apparently wasn't supposed to happen in the original writing of it. But yeah. Due to executive meddling, they go, no, we can't have that. And we're going to flip-flop on that. And that was kind of annoying because it's like, you know, it was interesting that they went for that. And then they just changed their mind. And it's kind of like, oh, like, stick to your guns. But, you know, that's how it ended. And, yeah, it's a thing. One thing about it that's quite cool is, and this was in the first series as well, it's one of those anime that has a different opening and ending each time. Like, the opening's always the same song, but they change the images based on what's happening in the show, and the ending's always different, so...
It's funny, because that's not really a common thing that happens in anime. Only other one that I can think of off the top of my head that uses a very similar thing, but actually, I suppose, does it better because it's more... in keeping with the entirety of the show, and you don't actually, basically the theme tune plays after the show has already started. So what you're seeing is actually the show.
Mm.
It's Aria, or any of them from the Aria franchise, because when Aria opens, you're actually seeing the anime already. It's just got the theme tune playing over the top of what you're actually watching.
Mm. That's a really interesting way of doing it, actually. It's quite different.
It is very, very different. And that's one of the reasons I like Aria, but yeah. Anyway, Ore no Emoto, Ore Emo, or whatever you want to call it, I can't even be bothered to try to pronounce the rest of the Japanese title.
Honestly, I feel like I've talked about it and haven't really said anything. I feel like there's things that I should be saying, but again, it's really sort of hard to get into it.
Feel like that. I mean, there's loads I could say about Gundam, but it's a 40-year-old series and everybody has pretty much said everything about it.
Mm.
You know, and I was distracted by a guy being hit in the wang by a kendo stick, so...
You've
got to watch that video.
I suppose to wrap it up, if you like sort of seeing girls passively aggressively fighting each other over a guy while still sort of being friends but still sort of having odds at each other,
school days,
this sort of like,
yeah, but like with less violence, I guess. This is kind of what this is, which is again quite different to the first bit, but
yeah
overall it's okay, it's all right, it's, you know, it does a lot of things well, I think, in terms of it does what it's trying to do well enough.
Yeah.
But as for what it actually is, it's been done before. The ending is quite unique, but yeah. So much more I want to say, but again, spoiler territory, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, on that note then, we are unfortunately at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for another week.
One more thing.
Oh.
Super GT cars, excess of 300 kiloliters per hour, so they're at least as fast as bullet trains. Hatsune Miku wins. It's better than Evangelion. I mean, not in Valkyrie and Gundam.
Bullet trains are 300 kilometers per hour.
I was talking to me. Hang on. Rebuttal coming in 10 seconds.
I'm going to wait for the bot.
320 kilometers an hour.
I said excess of 300, so.
Maximum operating speed is 320 km an hour, 200 miles per hour, 387.5 kilometers. The straight one at the straight intersection. Test runs have reached 443 kilometers. For conventional rail in 1996, but the world record's 581 kilometers.
Yeah, but Super the Maglev GT cars, ones. They can go left and right whenever they want, and bullet trains can't.
He's got a point. Okay, now, on that note, we are at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for another week. The Geek Show Podcast Network is a voluntary organization, so we do need your support. So if you can support us in some way, you'll find a donation button on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, or you can head over to the Geek Shop, which is on our website as well. We've got some merchandise on there, and a new website is coming very, very soon, as well as all sorts of other new and improved and shiny things. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And all of our shows are available on Mixcloud and YouTube and soon iTunes and Stitcher as well. I have been Rob.
I've been Tucky.
And I've been Lewis.
And Tucky's been making noise.
Terribly sorry.
Yes. And we'll see you all next week.
Oh, you guys are neighbours and you'll see us soon and cute and stuff. Okay.
Bye.